All right, so we're diving into some pretty crucial stuff today in corporate law. You know, fiduciary duties, sounds kind of dry, maybe, but trust me, this stuff gets really interesting when you see how it plays out in the real world,
Yeah.
especially when you're talking about situations with a controlling shareholder.
Yeah, it can get complicated quickly when you have someone with a lot of power in a company. It's all about balancing their rights with their responsibilities.
Exactly. And that's where Perlman v. Feldman comes in. It's this landmark case that really made everyone take a closer look at what controlling shareholders owe to everyone else. Like, what are their obligations to the other folks who own a piece of the company?
Yeah, this case really gets to the heart of corporate loyalty. Like, what does that actually mean in practice?
Totally. Okay, so to set the scene, we got to go back to the 1950s. The Korean War is happening, right? Huge demand for steel. And steel isn't really short supply. It's like suddenly the price of gold, right?
Right, it's a seller's market for sure.
Yeah.
And that context is super important for understanding this case.
Okay, so enter C. Russell Feldman. He's the chairman and president of Newport Steel Corporation.
A pretty important guy.
Oh, yeah, he's not just some random investor. This guy owns 37% of the company's stock.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's definitely in a position to make things happen, right? He's the controlling shareholder.
For sure, 37% is a controlling interest.
Okay, now think about this. During the Korean War, with steel being so scarce, any company that can produce steel has a ton of leverage. They get to decide who gets it right.
Absolutely. They're basically the gatekeepers. Huge bargaining power.
Huge. So along comes this company called Willport Company. They're a group of steel users, and they are desperate to secure their supply, you know, to keep their businesses going.
Makes sense. They need to keep the lights on.
Exactly. So they approach Feldman and offer him $20 per share for his stake in Newport Steel.
Okay. And what were the shares trading at? Was that a good price?
Way above market price,
Yeah.
way above. So Feldman walks away with a pretty nice profit, a really nice profit.
Yeah.
I see where this is going. I bet the other shareholders weren't too happy about that.
You got it. That's where the lawsuit comes in. The minority shareholders, those who own smaller portions of Newport Steel, they sued Feldman.
So what was their argument? I mean, yeah, he got a sweet deal, but can they really stop him from selling his own shares?
Well, they weren't just saying he sold high. Their argument was much more nuanced. They claimed that this premium wasn't just for the shares themselves. They said that Willport was actually paying extra, that premium, to gain control of Newport's ability to allocate steel. Like they were buying the power to decide who gets the steel.
I see. So it's not just about the stock, it's about the power that comes with it, especially in a time of shortage.
Exactly. And the minority shareholders, they argued that this power, this ability to allocate steel, wasn't Feldman's personal property to sell. They said it was a corporate asset, something that belonged to Newport Steel itself.
Interesting. So they're saying he basically sold something that wasn't his to sell.
Right. And that brings us to the central legal question. Can a controlling shareholder like Feldman profit from selling something that essentially belongs to the corporation? That's what the court had to decide.
Right. So how did this case make its way to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals?
Well, it actually started in the lower court, the district court. The minority shareholders filed their lawsuit there, but the court dismissed the case. They basically sided with Feldman, saying he had the right to sell his shares at a premium.
Ah, so the lower court didn't see a problem with the sale.
Yeah, not initially. But the minority shareholders, they weren't giving up. They appealed the decision, and that's how the case landed in the Second Circuit.
And that's where things got really interesting. So tell me about the Second Circuit's ruling.
Okay, so in the Second Circuit, we have Judge Clark writing the majority opinion. His opinion focused heavily on this idea of fiduciary duty. It's a fundamental concept in corporate law.
Okay, fiduciary duty. Remind me what that means again.
Sure. Basically, it means that people in positions of power within a corporation, like directors or controlling shareholders, they have a special obligation to act in the best interests of the company and all of its shareholders, not just themselves.
Right. So loyalty to the company and all its owners, not just looking out for number one.
Exactly. Now, Judge Clark applied this principle to Feldman's actions. He said that as a director and the controlling shareholder, Feldman had a duty of loyalty to all of Newport Steel's shareholders. And that included the minority shareholders who were bringing this lawsuit.
Okay, so Judge Clark is establishing that Feldman had this responsibility to act in everyone's best interest. But how did he connect that to this whole issue with the steel allocation and the big premium Feldman received?
Yeah, good question. So this is where this thing called the corporate asset doctrine comes in. Basically, it means that certain powers or advantages that a company possesses, they're treated as assets of the corporation itself. They're not just perks that an individual shareholder, even a controlling one, can personally profit from.
So it's like saying that the power to control the allocation of steel during this huge shortage, it's a valuable asset that belongs to Newport Steel, not to Feldman personally.
Exactly. The court's opinion was that this power to allocate steel was a tangible asset of the company. It was part of what made Newport Steel so valuable in the first place.
That makes sense, especially in a situation like this where steel is so hard to come by. The ability to control who gets it is worth a lot of money.
A lot.
Yeah.
So the court looked at the premium that Feldman received, that extra money on top of the market price of the shares, and they said, wait a minute, this isn't just payment for the stock itself. They saw it as compensation for the transfer of control over this valuable corporate asset, the power to allocate steel.
So basically, they saw it as Feldman taking a corporate asset and selling it for his own personal profit.
Precisely. The court believed that Feldman had essentially taken something that belonged to the company, something that gave Newport Steel a competitive advantage, and had used it to enrich himself at the expense of the other shareholders.
And Judge Clark had a pretty strong opinion on this, didn't he? Didn't he have a quote that really sums up the majority's view?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Judge Clark wrote, "The responsibility of the fiduciary includes uncorrupted business judgment for the sole benefit of the corporation." This quote really highlights the essence of fiduciary duty. It's saying that any decisions made by those in control, they have to be made for the benefit of the entire company, not for their own personal gain.
That's a pretty powerful statement. And I bet it resonated with the minority shareholders who felt that Feldman had betrayed their trust.
Definitely. But okay, I can already hear some folks pushing back on this. Like, isn't it normal to pay a premium for control of a company? If you're buying a big chunk of shares, you're getting the power to make decisions, right?
Mm.
How did the court address that? Why wasn't Feldman just entitled to a normal control premium?
That's a really important point. So let's break it down. In a typical situation, if you're buying a controlling stake in a company, you might pay a control premium. That means you pay a little extra for the ability to steer the company in a certain direction, to make those big decisions about its future.
Right, that makes sense. But you're saying there's a difference here.
Exactly. The court said that in this case, the premium Feldman received wasn't just for the general ability to control Newport Steel's future. It was directly tied to a specific corporate asset, that power to allocate steel during a time of critical shortage.
Ah, I see. So it wasn't just about the inherent value of controlling the company. It was about profiting from a specific advantage that the company had.
Exactly. It's like the court was saying, okay, you can't just take this special power that the company has and sell it off for your own benefit. That belongs to the corporation.
So the direct connection to this unique corporate asset is what made this sale different in the court's eyes.
Precisely. It wasn't just a standard control premium. It was about taking advantage of a particular situation, the steel shortage, and using it for personal gain.
Okay, so that's the majority opinion. But like we mentioned earlier, this wasn't a unanimous decision. Judge Swan, he had a different perspective, right?
Right. Judge Swan wrote the dissenting opinion. He had a more traditional view of stock sales. His main point was that, generally speaking, a controlling shareholder has the right to sell their shares at the best price they can get. And that usually includes a control premium.
Okay, so he's saying, hey, if someone's willing to pay extra for control, that's just how the market works.
Exactly. Now, he did acknowledge that there are exceptions to this. Like, if the buyer is clearly planning to harm the company, like loot it or something, then that's a different story.
So he's saying that a controlling shareholder can't just sell out to someone who's going to wreck the company.
Right. But in this case, Judge Swan didn't see any evidence that Willport was planning to do anything harmful to Newport Steel. He basically saw it as a regular stock transaction, even if the price was high.
So he wasn't convinced that Feldman had done anything wrong.
Right. He thought the minority shareholders were overreacting. He also pointed out that there wasn't enough proof to say that the $20 per share price was actually above the fair market value, even with the control premium factored in.
Interesting. So we got this clash of viewpoints. The majority sees it as exploitation of a corporate asset, while the dissent sees it as a normal stock sale just maybe a good deal for the seller.
Exactly. It's a fundamental disagreement about where the line is between a shareholder's right to profit and their duty to act in the best interests of the corporation.
Okay, so this case happened a while ago, back in the 1950s. Why are we still talking about it today? Like, what can law students, especially those interested in corporate law, learn from Perlman? What are the key takeaways?
Perlman didn't lay out a strict set of rules, but it definitely highlighted some important factors that courts might consider in similar situations. For instance, one big red flag is if the premium received by the selling shareholder is directly tied to a specific corporate asset.
Okay, that makes sense. Like, in this case, the premium was linked to that power to allocate steel.
Exactly. And another thing to consider is whether the seller had reason to believe that the buyer would harm the company after taking control. Even though Judge Swan focused on this in his dissent, the majority opinion also hinted at the importance of protecting the company's well-being.
So, if there's reason to think the buyer has bad intentions, that could be a problem.
Right. And finally, Perlman raised questions about whether the selling director, in this case Feldman, personally benefited from any changes to the board of directors or other corporate arrangements that were part of the sale. Like, was he getting something extra out of the deal that wasn't disclosed?
So any hints of personal gain at the company's expense could raise eyebrows.
Absolutely. So these are all things to watch out for in similar deals.
Now, this might seem a bit abstract, but how does Perlman v. Feldman apply to the world of mergers and acquisitions today? Like, what's the relevance for law students who are going to be dealing with these kinds of transactions?
Perlman is a major precedent in M&A. It's a cautionary tale about what we sometimes call side deals for corporate control. You can't just sell your controlling interest and get a huge premium if that premium is obviously linked to the transfer of something that belongs to the corporation itself. It's a no-no.
So, like, you can't just sell your controlling stake and then separately sell off a bunch of valuable assets to the buyer on the side.
Right, or offer board seats as part of the deal, things like that. Perlman makes it clear that the value of corporate assets and opportunities, it belongs to the corporation and all its shareholders, not just to the controlling shareholder who's looking to cash in.
So it's a reminder that corporate control comes with responsibilities. You can't just use it to enrich yourself.
Exactly. It's all about balancing those rights and responsibilities.
So to wrap things up, what's the main takeaway from Perlman v. Feldman? What's the big lesson for our listeners?
The core principle here is that controlling shareholders, they can't just personally profit by selling off corporate opportunities or assets under the guise of a stock sale. It's a breach of their fiduciary duty. Their control isn't a personal piggy bank.
So yeah, you can sell your shares, but you can't just take the company's crown jewels with you.
Right. And that's why Perlman is still so important in corporate law today. It's not just about avoiding obvious conflicts of interest. It's about recognizing that corporate power has to be exercised responsibly. And that means making sure that all stakeholders benefit, not just those at the top.
So it's about fairness, really, making sure that everyone gets a fair shake.
Exactly. Perlman was a landmark case in establishing that principle. It's a reminder that corporate law is there to protect everyone involved, not just those who hold the reins.
Absolutely. Well, that was a fascinating deep dive into Perlman v. Feldman. It really gets you thinking, doesn't it?
It does. It makes you wonder about the ethical lines that controlling shareholders have to be careful not to cross, even in today's complex business world. Like, what are the modern day equivalents of that steel allocation power?
Right. How do these principles apply to things like intellectual property or strategic partnerships? Lots to ponder.
A lot to ponder indeed. And for those of you listening who are thinking about a career in corporate law, Perlman v. Feldman is a case you'll want to keep coming back to. It's a classic for a reason. It really gets to the heart of what corporate responsibility is all about.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time.
See you then.